Good morning. O544A2 Cotchard versus Atigen Medical International. Mr. Zaremski.
Good morning, Your Honor. It's Miles Zaremski, one of the attorneys for appellant, together with Malone Stein and Craig Mandel, who's sitting on the bench awaiting the results of the bar examination.
Oh, my God. Today?
No.
How long?
End of the month.
Your Honor, the district judge got it wrong in two major ways. In the order of dismissal in October of 2005, Judge Sharp stated, and I quote, any promise or representation that could give rise to a fraud in the inducement claim is necessarily part of the agreement that defines the appropriate form, close quote. This just emaciates the law regarding a cause of action on fraud in the inducement, because if Judge Sharp were correct on that point, every fraud in the inducement to a contract would be merged into language in the contract, regardless of whether the contract even spoke at all to the subject matter which formed the fraud in the inducement claim.
What's the measure of damages?
Pardon?
What's the measure of damages?
The measure of damages can either be under the contract itself, or if it's under the Uniform Commercial Code, consequential damages, which this court recognizes together with attorney's fees. Now, we have not gotten to the point of damages yet. It's just the form in which the dispute is going to be either litigated or alternative dispute resolution.
But I was interested in the same question, how the damages were calculated and how much she claims is at issue.
Well, certainly, depending upon how the pleadings are ultimately framed, damages include consequential damages. That is, if she could have billed and collected from third-party payers over the useful life of the machine, that would be part of a damage claim. Now, under the UCC, and we have not gotten to the point of amending our complaint, which we haven't even gotten to yet because they filed the 12B3 before we've even gotten to the pleadings, that is allowable together with reasonable attorney's fees.
So it's not contract-based damages?
It's not necessarily contract-based damages. And the other thing is that we're not suing under the terms of a contract. It's under the fraud in the inducement, which is a tort, which is a separate cause of action. So we aren't suing under any term within the four corners of the contract. Now, the second point that Judge Sharp, in other words, he is saying that I can take any statement or promise or representation and just put it into the four corners.
Well, I see, I'm having a little difficulty. Why do you maintain that the district court added terms to the contract? I mean, didn't it just interpret the forum selection clause to cover fraud in the inducement claim?
Judge Rovner, the second major error has to do with creating a breach. The lower court inserted terms from the formation stage and put it into the four corners of the document, then say this is a breach of contract claim, which is then guided by the form selection clause. Now, Judge Dr. Kokert could not take language extrinsic to the contract, which is silent on third-party reimbursement, and then claim there's a breach, she would be barred by the parole evidence rule, and certainly there is also an integration clause. So if she is barred from doing that, the lower court could not be as well.
The parole evidence rule doesn't bar extrinsic evidence in a fraud and inducement claim.
No, it does not. And that's what our claim is about. But what Judge Sharp did is say, no, it's not a fraud in the inducement claim. It's a breach of contract claim.
Now, where did the contract negotiations take place?
In the Northern District of Indiana.
Is that why you think it's a superior venue?
Well, it's a superior venue. It is more convenient for the parties. The negotiations took place. The negotiations took place with Dr. Coker, who's a resident and citizen of the Northern District of Indiana, principally Lafayette, Indiana, and therefore the forum was most appropriate there rather than having to schlep, if you will, to Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, you want to get this tort claim before a jury, too, I assume, rather than go back to Georgia and arbitrate.
Well, that's correct. We believe that we are entitled to a jury as well. So there's some practical reasons as well as legal ones why we have chosen this forum, and we believe that we're entitled to do so. Now, I wanted to get to my opening argument, and I've got 7 minutes, so I'm rushing through it, and I apologize. But besides these two major points of error and that the lower court committed, is what does the form selection clause say? That's really what the guts of this dispute is about.
Well, it isn't limited to a dispute relating to a breach of the agreement, is it?
Pardon? I'm sorry.
See, the form selection clause doesn't seem to be limited to a dispute that would relate to a breach.
Oh, it's in fact, the wording.
I mean, what I'm wondering was, at the very least, shouldn't we let the Georgia State Court determine whether the arbitration agreement applies?
The Georgia law only applies to the obligations of the obligations and rights of the sellers and buyers. We're dealing with the sellers of the product, and there's only three obligations that the seller had under the contract: delivery, on-site setup, and training. There is no obligation regarding third-party payment. Therefore, Georgia law does not apply.
The contract has been fully performed by both sides.
Pardon?
The contract has been fully performed by both sides.
The contract has been performed. There was a delivery and setup of the machine. Just the fact that Dr. Coker was told in writing, you can get reimbursed by third-party payers, including Medicare, and what a great deal you have. So the machine was delivered, and it's in the Dr. Coker's office, yes. So Georgia law would not apply to any of the rights or obligations of the seller, because in the contract there was only three. Third-party reimbursement is not one of those obligations. Secondly, Judge Rovner, you had said that forum selection clause pertain to breach of contract. It pertains to performance interpretation or breach of contract. All right? We're not dealing with performance. We're not dealing with interpretation. But the next is breach. There is no breach of contract but for what the lower court did by taking a term outside of the contract, which is silent on that area, engrafting it into the language, and then declaring, it's a breach, and therefore the form selection clause applies. I'd like to reserve a couple of minutes for rebuttal.
Do you agree, though, that this is drafted to be as broad as possible when it uses this language like any controversy, any dispute growing out of this relationship is going to be resolved through arbitration?
Each and every case, American Patriot, the Sphere case, the Lambert case out of the First Circuit that our opponents cite, have a rather broadly worded dispute clause. Any dispute, all terms and conditions, without qualification, our dispute resolution clause is limited to performance, interpretation, and breach. And again, as I indicated, performance and interpretation are not the subject of this dispute, just breach. And breach only comes about because the lower court took representations or promises in the formation stage and stuck them into a contract that is silent. And you can't do that. And I'll reserve a couple of minutes for rebuttal unless there's any other questions at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Zaremski.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Pennell.
Uh, Thank you, Your Honor. I'm here to speak on behalf of the two defendants, Antigen and North American Medical. Coker alleges in her complaint that the defendants fraudulently induced her to enter into a contract for the purchase of medical equipment based upon her representation that the charges for the use of the equipment would be reimbursed by third-party payers, including Medicare. The contract contains a forum selection clause. The first part says that the parties consent to venue in Georgia, which is as broad as one can be. The Coker contends that because she is only suing for fraud and not suing for breach of contract, that the forum selection clause doesn't apply. Indeed, the essence of Coker's argument is that because of the parole evidence rule and the integration clause, she would be barred from bringing a suit for breach of contract. Thus, the issue is, can the plaintiff, by artful pleading, by limiting her claim to fraud rather than breach of contract, avoid the forum selection clause? And the law in this circuit is clearly no. This precise issue was recently considered by this court in the case of American Patriot Insurance Agency versus Mutual Risk Management Limited. The issue in that case was exactly the same issue.
Well, the language of the forum selection clause was different. The language and broader, arguably, than the language of this clause.
Well, okay, there are two parts to this forum selection clause. The first part says the parties consent to venue in Georgia.
Well, that overstates it.
Well, that's the first part. Then there's an arbitration provision. And the arbitration provision states...
Go back to the first part.
Okay. The agreement and the rights and obligations of buyer and seller shall be governed by... Well, that's the first sentence.
That's the forum selection clause.
Well, that's the choice of law provision. The second sentence...
It also talks about venue and forum.
The second sentence says, buyer agrees to consent to jurisdiction, venue, and forum in the state court of Fulton County. So that's the part I'm talking about forum. That's not arbitration. The second sentence, or the next sentence, deals with arbitration. And that language is also very broad. I believe it deals with the situation that Judge Posner was considering in the American Patriot. Because in American Patriot, the language was, any dispute concerning the agreement will be decided under the laws of Bermuda. And the plaintiff said, this doesn't concern the agreement. And Judge Posner says, it doesn't matter whether it says arising out of or in connection with or concerning the agreement. It's semantic quibbling. It's still broad enough. And the United States Supreme Court in the Prima Paint case also dealt with language that said that any dispute regarding the agreement or the breach of the agreement will be considered by the law of this other jurisdiction. That language is essentially the same as the language here. There's no material difference. So if you have the language in Prima Paint or American Patriot or this case, the question still is not does the dispute concern the performance of the agreement? The question then is, what is the agreement? If the promise is part of the agreement, then clearly it does. The issue really is, and the crux of the issue is, does this dispute concern the agreement? And the court of American Patriot took that issue head on and said, yes.
But your forum selection clause and the arbitration clause and the choice of law provision do not use the phrase any dispute relating to this agreement or connected to this agreement or concerning this agreement. It's more limited to rights and obligations under the agreement and breach performance or interpretation, which arguably this dispute is not about.
Well, again,
or is it your position that this fraud and inducement claim really is about breach?
That's exactly our position.
And by what provision of law?
Okay. All right. Well, let's step back. First of all, the agreement says any controversy, dispute, or claim. So it does use the word any, and that's in the arbitration provision. And then it talks about performance of the agreement. So what is the agreement? That gets back to Mr. Zaremski's point. His argument is this promise is not part of the agreement. The court, again, in American Patriot, said that a promise that was the basis for fraud and the inducement is part of the agreement, and therefore the forum selection clause does apply. And let me go back to the theoretical basis for
the American Patriot case held that a misrepresentation made in the inducement of a contract becomes a part of the contract?
It said concerns the contract. That was the language in that case.
Right, because the clause in question in that case said concerns the contract, which is not what we have here. So we would have to buy into your argument that a misrepresentation made in the inducement of a contract becomes a term of the contract in a fraud on the inducement claim, and therefore the form selection clause that applies to breach of the contract is in play.
Okay, let me try and answer it this way. The plaintiff is claiming that there was breach of the promise, which was made in the formation of the contract, which is the basis for fraud and the inducement.
No, the plaintiff is claiming that she was relying on what turned out to be false representations, not about right. the product itself, but about reimbursability under third-party payor agreements,
right.
and the which is not the subject matter of the contract, essentially. It's entirely collateral. So it's a pretty pure misrepresentation fraud claim.
It's a misrepresentation fraud claim, but it's still part of the agreement because that promise induced her to enter into the agreement.
Yeah, but since there's nothing about Medicare reimbursement in the contract, aren't the facts that would be necessary to resolve the fraud and the inducement claim completely different from the facts needed to resolve a breach of contract claim, such that the suit doesn't really relate to a breach of the agreement? I think that's
your question.
Okay, well, let me try and give you four cases under Indiana law where this exact issue came up. The plaintiff made there was a representation by the defendant in the formation of the contract. That promise was breached. There was a contract which did not contain that promise. The plaintiffs then in each case brought a lawsuit to recover for fraud and breach of contract based upon the breach of the promise which was made in the formation of the contract. In each case, the court held that the parole evidence rule and the integration clause were not obstacles to that promise being considered a part of the contract so that the plaintiff could pursue a claim against the defendant both for fraud in the inducement and breach of contract. And in each one of these cases, the plaintiff in fact recovered a judgment against the defendant on both theories for fraud in the inducement and breach of contract for breach of that promise which was made in the formation of the contract.
But don't we still have to ascertain whether the promises themselves are part of the contract to determine whether or not her claim relates to the interpretation, performance, or breach of the agreement?
Yes, and that's precisely the point. This promise is part of the contract. The parole evidence rule does not keep that promise from being part of the contract.
But that doesn't mean those promises are necessarily part of the agreement, does it?
Yes, it does, because in each of these four cases, the plaintiff brought suit to recover for breach of contract, for breach of that promise, which was a promise made in the formation of the contract. Let me give you those cases. Moore versus Harmon. It's an 1885 Indiana.
They're in your brief.
They're in brief. Indiana Supreme Court case. Clark Auto versus Reynolds. It's a 1949 Indiana Court of Appeals case. Whitco Properties versus Theobar. It's a 1984 Indiana Court of Appeals case. And just last year, the court in American Directories, Inc. versus Stellhorn, One Hour Photo, Inc., also held that a promise made during the formation of the contract, not contained in the contract, was the basis for the bargain for the contract so that the plaintiff could bring suit for fraud in the inducement because of that promise or representation and also recover damages against that defendant for breach of the same promise on a breach of contract claim. And the court said, affirming judgment for One Hour Photo just last year, that the fact that the contract contained an integration clause would not defeat either claim for breach of contract or fraud because the law permits introduction of prior statements to prove fraud in the inducement as an exception to the parole evidence rule.
That case was very different than what we've got here. As I recall the facts of that case, it was representations that were made in the inducement of a contract about cancellation privileges.
That's correct.
And the contract itself said no cancellation, essentially. And so the court held that there was a good claim for fraud in the inducement and a good breach of contract claim.
That's correct.
But that's not what we have here. We have a completely collateral misrepresentation that doesn't modify the contract so as to become part of the contract so that the suit is for breach. It's just a freestanding fraud claim.
Well, I don't believe that it's a freestanding fraud claim because but for that promise, there would be no contract. The promise that Dr. Kokert is alleging is a promise that because expenses for the use of this equipment will be reimbursed by Medicare, that then induced her to enter into the contract. But for this representation, there would be no contract. She would not have purchased the equipment. So the fraud, if you will, was not material. This representation was not a material element of her fraud if she didn't purchase the equipment. So you can't have a contract here for the equipment without having the representation made at the beginning that induced her to buy the equipment. Those two are related, and that's exactly what the court in American Patriot said. The promise and the contract are related. You can't just separate one from the other, because without the promise, there would be no contract. So because the two are related, because under Indiana law and as well as the law of every other jurisdiction, a promise or representation made in the formation of the contract, it can be a basis for a suit both in fraud and for breach of contract. And that's exactly what the court in American Patriot held, and that's what every other court which has considered this issue has held. Promises made at the beginning in the formation of the contract relate to the contract, which is then entered into as the basis of the bargain based upon their representation.
So the fraud claim becomes a breach of contract claim. It's not a fraud claim?
No, it's still a fraud claim because the elements are different. You still have to, and that's what this court in the Vigor-Tone case said. The elements are different. You can recover on a fraud claim or breach of contract claim. Fraud, you still have to prove reliance. You still have to prove scienter. And that's what the courts in these other four cases, which I've cited to you from Indiana, also held. You don't have to prove those elements to prove fraud in the inducement. But where there's fraud in the inducement, the parole evidence rule, the integration clause do not keep that promise from being considered as part of the contract, which becomes the basis for the action for breach of contract. And that's why in every one of these cases, the plaintiff recovered on damages both for fraud in the inducement and breach of contract.
Would either the forum selection clause or the arbitration clause still apply if Dr. Kosher were suing for rescission instead of damages?
Under Indiana law, a party where there's fraud in the inducement, the party has an option to sue for rescission or for damages. She could have done either. She sued for damages, so she's affirmed the contract. Had she sued for rescission, there would still be a contract because, again, the law is that where there's fraud in the inducement, the contract is not void, it's voidable, which gets you into the Speer-Drake analysis. If the contract is completely void, then the forum selection clause would not apply. If the contract is only voidable because of fraud in the inducement, the forum selection clause does apply.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Zaremski.
Your Honors, in the American Patriot case, the forum selection clause says, and I quote, The agreement states that it shall be exclusively governed by and construed in accordance with the laws of Bermuda, and any dispute concerning this agreement shall be resolved by the courts of Bermuda. They use the term any dispute. We don't have the words any dispute. We have a much more narrow clause, as Your Honors have recognized this afternoon. The Indiana cases, likewise, as well as this court's Vigor-Tone case, which was the pig contract case, all had language within the contract upon which the breach of contract claim could be made. Dr. Kochert has no such language within the four corners of this purchase agreement. That is, she could not assert a breach of contract case ab initio, because that is not covered within the four corners. As well, there was reference to the Vigor-Tone case. In that case, Judge Posner and the panel had this to say: the contract required PM to furnish Provimi a complete list of Vigor-Tone's contracts. PM could not argue otherwise. In other words, there was a basis for a breach of contract claim independent from a fraud in the inducement. And my final comment is the UCC gives the pleader an option of damages to elect, but we aren't even at that stage yet. We're not even at issue with respect to the pleadings. Your Honors, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks to one and all. Good luck on the bar. And this court is in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30, and your case will be taken under advisement.